other yak babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, the new podcast on the internet sponsored by the wonderful World of Onions. My name is Aaron Block, with my personal pals Dave.
Hey, boys.
Brick.
Hey, boys.
And calling from overseas, it's Old Irish Nico.
Hello.
It's about time for a reading roundup. Our What Are Reading episodes are a regular feature. We talk about just things we've been checking out or reading recently. The past couple of weeks, we've done records on group reads. We've read Lord of the Flies together and Goodbye Columbus, so a lot has been dominated by that, but I want to hear about the things you're reading in the periphery of those big assignments. Let's start over here with Brick. What have you been reading?
I have two nonfiction books this time, which is a departure. First one I'm going to talk about quickly because I don't think it interests anyone. The first one is this book. It's called The Trauma of Everyday Life by Mark Epstein. My profession is I work with traumatized children, so I read a lot of books about trauma and its effects. I'm always looking for kind of not too technical books about that. There's a lot of good ones that are, you know, really long, like books by psychologists that really, really get into PTSD or whatever, and that's not an easy thing to kind of pass and encourage people to read. So I'm looking for books more like this one, which it was. So this guy is a psychiatrist, and he's a Buddhist. So it really focuses on the idea, I think, especially relevant in the current existential climate, that a trauma doesn't need to be a massive event or a life altering singularity in your own timeline. It can just be like an accumulation of big and small things in your life that impact specifically your development if you're younger, but also adults as well, and they can really interrupt us. And you know, death by a thousand cuts is still a death.
Right.
So it really kind of focuses that in a positive light and how to work with people to sort of help them get around the idea that the way we deal with trauma is not to try and erase the trauma. It's to learn to live with it and to grow from it.
Right.
So it's a very good book. A little heavy on the Buddhism, so if that's not your thing, you wouldn't like it. But otherwise, pretty good. The Trauma of Everyday Life by Mark Epstein.
And you had mentioned, sorry, real quick, you mentioned like something to pass on or tell people to read it. Are you recommending this to like coworkers, or this is like just like, would you recommend this to other readers just in general?
Both, I think. It wouldn't be the first book on trauma or the first book on Buddhism I would pass off, but it's very readable. So I also think it would be something that people who are drawn to self-help books would like, because it addresses some of those same avenues, but it's a little more based in science than New Age perspective.
So, gotcha.
But it is pretty Buddhist, so if that's not your thing, then stay away. Right. And then secondly, we mentioned this over the summer, and then I decided not to talk about it because I hadn't finished it yet, and it seemed like a book I really need to finish before I can talk about it. But I read How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi. Maybe a little late to the conversation, but not that late, unfortunately. This is a really good book. It's kind of hard to get into it too deep without then that being what the episode's right about. But it's very readable. It's, you know, it's kind of a treatise on reframing our perspectives on how we even talk about racism, and really how do we get to the core of the strife that's in our country, which is no one knows how to talk about it. And in fact, some people don't want to talk about it. And until we're willing to, not even willing, until we're forcing ourselves to talk about it pretty much constantly, it wins. So a lot of it is about reframing those conversations, how to kind of work introspectively. You know, he's a Black man, but it's not written for any particular group, right? It's written for Americans. And it's very interesting. He's a strong writer. It's sort of framed through, I don't say memoir, but it's framed through a series of personal experiences, particularly his kind of intellectual and emotional development. So it starts nearly starts with some speeches he wrote as a teenager when he was kind of angry. And then it's kind of about his journey through learning how his perspective was coming from the right place, but wasn't quite addressing what it needed to address, and then sharing that. And he's a good writer, and it's a readable book, and it's also very interesting. It's hard to read because I think the truths that we have to face are difficult and overwhelming and seem almost insurmountable, but unless we try, then nothing changes and probably gets worse, right? So definitely recommend it. I am not super well read on books of this ilk, but it's certainly one of the better ones that I'm aware of. I found myself agreeing with a lot of what he had to say.
He's at BC now, right? I think he is teaching at BC. Like, just got hired this year, I think.
Maybe. That's cool. I didn't know that. It says, as his thing, just he started the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Center at American University. And then it just says he's a professor of history and international relations.
Oh, yeah.
But it doesn't say where. So
he was, I mean, don't quote me, I guess, but I'm pretty sure he's was higher up ABC this year.
It's really good. I'd be interested in reading his other books. Apparently his previous book won the National Book Award. So that one's called Stamped from the Beginning. So maybe I'll check that. Maybe I'll check that out.
Nico, what about you?
I read, I'd say, two books of interest this time period. I can't remember how long it's been. The first one was Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates, just kind of in a similar vein. It's kind of, it's a shorter, kind of more personal kind of book about racism in America. It's like written as a letter to his son, basically telling him about what he's going to have to do as a black man in America. It kind of goes back again and again to the physicality of racism and how kind of every racist interaction is kind of implicitly a physical threat, because like white people in America have a lot more leeway to with violence toward black people than the other way around, and cops have a lot more predilection to beat or murder black people without repercussion. So there's a lot of like him kind of talking about how racism is a threat to his body constantly, which is which is a bit different than the other books I've read, and it's pretty good. And then the other one was this random mystery book I got. I think it must have been on sale on Audible or something, because it's, I don't know why else I would have picked it up. It's called The Boy by Tammy Hoag, and it was a real weird one to read in 2020, because it's a mystery. It's like a police procedural kind of mystery, and it is extremely pro-cop, and it's like a little... it's a little awkward in light of current events to be reading. Like, so there's two cops, one of whom is good and one of whom is bad. And like his boss is like the politician who's bad. And you can tell that one guy is good and one guy is bad, because she sets up these scenes where they each interact with their children. And the bad cop is an asshole to his kid. And the good cop is like a really nice dad. And you're like, okay, so this guy's supposed to be good. But then the good cop goes off and like does all this shit. Like he like goes to a guy who might have seen something happen the night this woman gets murdered. And because the guy is an ex-con, he wants to like search his house without a warrant and like do all this shit. And he's like telling the guy he doesn't have rights and all this stuff. And he's like, in this internal monologue, he's like, this piece of shit, I can't believe he's not going to let me search his house. Like, what do you have to hide, huh? What's the reason you won't let me search his house? It's like, fucking due process, dude. Like, what do you do? What? And there's a lot of that kind of stuff. And like the media to the good cop even is nothing but like a bunch of, you know, mud throwing losers who just want to stir up a story and don't care about what the truth is. Only he cares about the truth and like all this shit. And it's kind of a drag. I don't know if I'm gonna finish it.
Did you accidentally like infiltrate a Blue Lives Matter like literary sub-community?
it's weird.
Sounds really bad.
It's politically awful.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like
that's it for me.
Any like mystery or crime fiction, especially true crime writing, like has that problem of valorizing police or like the carceral system, being like, yeah, and he was put away forever. You're like, oh, good. And when you sort of
happily ever after,
yeah. When you think about it more, you're like, well, there's lots of problems with this.
Right. I mean, and there are a lot of mysteries where it's not clear cut, you know. And somebody and I think the best kinds of mystery endings are the ones where somebody has to make a decision that's not necessary. It's not necessarily left up to the system, you know, to enforce, you know, a penal sentence. Yeah. But yeah, there is a lot of that kind of, Blue Lives Matter kind of shit.
Maybe that's the appeal of Cozies, is that it's people solving crimes who aren't cops. Or like a part of the appeal is it's like you can get the same, like, you know, hormonal satisfaction of having justice be done, but not because, like, well, it was just by a crafty craft person as opposed to a cop.
I bet you most Cozy readers are pro cop.
Yeah, and it kind of feels too that the like amateur sleuth always has the help of a friendly local cop.
That's true.
Reading through a few of those, I never finished one, but I've browsed through a few of our friend Diana Mott Davidson's books, and there's always this like cop friend that's on the periphery.
That's totally true.
Helping out the cooking pro tag in between her tomato brie pies or whatever. So yeah, it feels like even those are pro cop, even when it's not the cops doing all the heavy lifting.
Yeah, totally. You're right about that.
Right.
That's wild. Did you listen to Between the World and Me on audiobook as well, or did you read that in print form?
Yeah, I listened to it. Did Coach read it? And he, nice. Yeah, yeah, it's good. Yeah. Yeah. It's short. It's really short. It's like 3 hours long.
Yeah, it's a short book. Excellent. Dave, what about you?
I'm reading very slowly through a story collection by a writer named Leah Hampton, which is called Fuckface. It's stories mostly set in Appalachia, or exclusively, I guess. Do you guys say Appalachia or Appalachia?
This came up recently, maybe on a podcast. I always have said Appalachia, but I think it's wrong. I think Appalachia is correct.
Appalachia. Maybe it depends on, like, where you're from. Maybe it's a regional.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Maybe it's a conch versus conch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys love Appalachia.
Yeah, I would imagine it's different in Maine versus, like, Tennessee or whatever. Kentucky? Where does Appalachia go?
Yeah, it's there. There's some of the stories are in Kentucky. Some are in West Virginia, the western edge of North Carolina, all through that region. Huh. I don't know. I've read through maybe four or five of them. They're good. They're definitely... The first word that came to mind is readable, which is a word that I've always hated to see and to use. So I don't know why that happened, but...
Self-hatred.
Everything I say is self-hatred. So I'll finish it. I don't think it's going to stick with me, but it's, you know, it's well done. I guess I might say that this, and it sounds shitty to say this, and we've talked it into the ground, I'm sure, but it feels kind of like overly workshopped. Work sometimes.
Let's dig into that a little bit. What are some of the giveaways for you of overly workshopped writing?
Maybe very tightly structured to the point where emotion is there's not a lot of energy.
Right.
Maybe.
Right.
There's more of a focus on structure and syntax and stuff like that rather than getting deep into character or expressing much I don't know. Fuck, I'm at a loss.
No, I think you're totally right about that. We've talked about, like, workshopping. At least one of the problems that we had with workshops in our past was a tendency to focus on technical things and to leave out the more, like, emotional qualities of the reading experience that we read to be, like, taken away or overwhelmed by a story in some way, and not just to be like, ah, this does these things very nicely. It's a different response, right? And the workshop is so often a place where there's no emotion allowed.
Yeah, that's a good call. I would say that I end each story thinking, well, that was well written, rather than, wow, that really, you know, that affected me in some way.
Yeah, totally. I see that.
I wonder if that is kind of like a byproduct of just rewriting a story over and over, and like to the point where you can't even... Like, after a couple times, I would imagine you can't really appreciate the emotional impact quite as much as you can, like, see how a sentence is written.
Right.
Yeah. And it's, like, easier on the third read-through to change a word choice rather than, like, a character nuance.
Yeah, I've definitely done that before myself. Like, a first draft of a story will feel like I'm getting across what I want to. And then by the fourth draft, it's like, well, kind of the same thing. Like, oh, this is, you know... This is well done and well put together, but oh, what happened to all of the what happened to the spirit?
Yeah, there was some feeling behind it. It got sort of sapped out somehow. Yeah, that's cool.
Fuckface.
Fuckface. Yeah, the cover has an asterisk over the U, or replacing the U.
Cowards.
The story itself is called Fuckface.
Right. Cool. A couple things. I got back into comics this past week. I've always been into comics. It's not like I had to, like, really return. But when COVID hit, I guess around April, maybe it was the end of March, comics stopped. They stopped producing them and stopped delivering them to stores. So the comics were on hold for a while. They came back, I want to say, in maybe May. It wasn't that long of a break, but there was enough of a break where it was like I wasn't going to the shop. There wasn't anything new coming out. And I don't read digital first. I tend to read print first, except for some very rare exceptions. So I just didn't have any new comics for a while. So I went back to the comic book store recently and got my backlog, and there was a lot of it.
Were they still like shipping them to shops?
No. So everything was shut down production-wise. And they returned to send them back to shops, but I'm not going out that often and not going to the city very often. So it's a special trip to get to the comic book store. So I went to pick up my backlog and got like three bags full of comics are waiting for me. So working through those. Couple big things to note here. The first one, most significant for this podcast, is Strange Adventures, written by Tom King and drawn by Mitch Gerads. They were the team behind Mr. Miracle, which Dave and I both really loved. Dave, did you ever finish Mr. Miracle, or are we still waiting on the conclusion of that one for you?
We're still waiting on Dave to finish.
Okay, great.
I don't even, honestly, I have no idea where it even is right now.
Right. There's a Mr. Miracle reread happening sometime in the future.
I'll probably read it.
Yeah, you should. I'd be curious to see what you think about it. So Strange Adventures is their sort of new pairing. It's coming from DC's Black Label imprint, which is just kind of like a different version of their, like, more, it's not even more adult, it's just a bit more, I wouldn't let a kid read this necessarily, although it's not really that bad, actually. The premise here is Adam Strange is a longtime DC character who was sort of in the Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers mold, like a Earth, I think he was an archaeologist maybe, who was zapped to a different planet by a beam and became a hero and adventurer there with a jetpack and a laser. This is like a 50s, 60s sci-fi DC character. He's been around forever. So in this book, he is returning to Earth, having prevented an invasion of a race called the Picts, and has written a book about his exploits. And then he's accused of being a traitor, or being a murderer, sorry. He's accused of basically committing war. And so he takes this case to Batman and says, would you investigate this and make sure that I'm, like, clean, because I don't want my reputation tarnished. And Batman passes it off on a character named Mr. Terrific, who's also a longtime DC character who, in the Golden Age in the 40s, wore a, like, green sport coat with a red vest that said Fair Play on it. And his whole thing was he's basically like Batman. He's, like, rich, super smart, super athlete, can do everything, and then devoted his life to fighting crime because he wanted the world to be fair. The new version of Mr. Terrific is same thing, with a leather jacket instead of a vest, and a lot much cooler design, but he's a cool character. I mean, so he's the third smartest person alive. And so the idea is, like, he'll figure out, like, he'll solve this case because he's, like, too smart. So I'm up to issue 3 so far, and it's good. It's slower than Mr. Miracle was. We're kind of just still in this, you know, what is the mystery, what's happening kind of mode. It's partially drawn by Doc Shaner as well, who has a very different art style than Mitch Garrett's, and they alternate in terms of time. Doc Shaner does the stuff that's set on Rand during, like, the adventure period, and Garrett's does the stuff that's set on Earth during the investigation period. So there's this contrast. Mitch Garrett's art is a bit more, I don't know, kind of grainy. It's a bit more realistic, or not realistic, but sort of like, it's like contemporary. Whereas Doc Shaner's art feels much more like iconic. It's like, you know, sort of clean lines and really bright colors. It's very sort of like almost cartoonish in a good way sort of feel to it. So that contrast is really interesting in this book. I'm not as hooked as I was Mr. Miracle, just because the concept is a bit more of a slow burn. But it's interesting, and I'm looking forward to seeing what's behind this. There's some controversy because Tom King was in the CIA, and he served in the CIA during the Iraq War. And lots of people are critical of him for that, rightly so, and are critical of his attempts to atone for his, like, participation in war through his comics. But I find it interesting. I'm not so critical of that necessarily. If you're going to do something maybe that's not great, maybe you should atone for it, or sort of come to grips with it some way through your art. Yeah, so looking forward to reading more of this, but not, it's so far just good, not great. I also read a comic by Kieran Gillen, who is a notable villain on this podcast because no one liked Phonogram and made fun of me for that. We did mostly like Die. Kind of stopped reading it after issue 5 or so, but I think we were mostly on board with that. This book called The Ludocrats is, it seems like a satire of the aristocracy, but I can't quite tell where it's going just yet. Really nice art by someone whose name I don't know, and that person's name is Jeff Stokely. Written by Kieran Gillen and co-written by Jim Rossignol, I believe, is the other writer. Good, fun, but nothing that I was like so blown away by just yet. But we'll see where it goes. It's definitely very bright, which is fun to read. Yeah, so that's that. Strange Adventures and Ludocrats from me. Readers, listeners, what are you listening to? What are you reading?
Better be Yak Babies.
Stop listening to other podcasts and just listen to Yak Babies. Tell us about your reading material on Twitter at Yak Babies and email us at Gmail. Yak Babies.
There we go.
Starting the day strong.
YakBabiesPodcast@gmail.com.
It's not technically that wrong. I mean, you do email us at Gmail.
That's true. I got turned around the old path there. Mm. Yeah, so write to us, tweet at us, that kind of thing. Write us a review on Apple Podcasts, whatever that app platform is. Let us know what your rating is. Go for 5 stars, that's my suggestion. Also, check us out on patreon.com/yakbabies. For $1 a month, you can get access to our secret podcast. Secret makes it sound more exciting, and also it is secret because the things we're talking about on the Patreon feed are not for the main feed. We're playing games, we're revealing secrets, we're blackmailing ourselves essentially. So get involved in that for $1 a month on Patreon and see all the blackmail material ready for you right there. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all their loyal listeners and especially their patrons past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, and William Howard Taft.